This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is Jay Stowe with the next installment of Esquire's March 2024 issue, the one with Austin Butler on the cover. Austin Butler never backs down, it says. We're going to jump back into the person of interest piece in the front of the book, the blueprint section. We were reading about the chef who believes he can change the world, Pierre Thiam. And there was a sidebar, America's essential African influenced restaurants. Dakar Nola, New Orleans. Chef Serigny Mbaye connects West African foods to Southern cuisines with dishes like the last meal, a bowl of black-eyed peas and palm oil, the meal fed to the enslaved from Senegambia during the Middle Passage. Ubuntu, Los Angeles. Spicy jollof arancini, grits made from the African heritage grain fonio, a Nigerian pie stuffed with lion's mane mushrooms. Chef Shanari Freeman makes crave-worthy comforting food that draws from West Africa. Baobab Fair, Detroit. Owners Nadia Njimbere and Hamisi Mamba shine a light on underrepresented East African classics like a goat shank called Mbutsi and Ugali with a hearty okra stew. Hav and Mar, New York. Salmon cured in beriberi spices. Fries with a hot sauce called awaze. Crisps made of injera. The flavors of Ethiopia purr throughout Hav and Mar's menu. Dreamed up by Marcus Samuelson and delivered by executive chef Farial Abdullahi, the menu proves that merging ideas from East Africa and Scandinavia makes perfect sense. Next up, libations. Happy Hour High. A new crop of cocktail-centric THC-infused beverages is out to change the way you drink, by Kevin Santumuan. Suffer enough hangovers and drinking booze starts to lose some of its appeal quickly. It takes just one overzealous happy hour to make you swear you'll never put a margarita to your lips again. There are alternatives, of course. You could take a break from drinking. You could drink less. Or you could consider a third option. Cannabis beverages. As legalized weed wafts across the country, dispensaries seem to be as ubiquitous as Starbucks in California and Colorado. New THC libations are sprouting fast. The global market for cannabis drinks is estimated to be worth $1 billion and is projected to reach nearly $4 billion by the end of the decade. That's a drop in the bucket compared with the amount spent on alcohol. But it's significant in that, for the sober curious, the Cali sober, no booze, only weed, and those who just want a different kind of buzz, there's now a viable alternative to the ancient tradition of raising a glass to celebrate or forget the day. For a while, THC-infused beverages all tasted like White Claw wannabes. These days, they're more varied, with offerings that include wines, flavorful tonics, and even Amaros. We've highlighted some of our picks below. If you've ever tried marijuana in any form, then you know it's not the same as beer. There's a fine line between being outgoing and buzzed and turning into the most introspective person in the room, who's also desperate for a nap. 5 milligrams is considered a full dose, and you will probably feel its effects in 15 to 30 minutes. Do yourself a favor and wait a while before popping another drink. It's best to proceed into this world carefully, as with any unfamiliar drug. But once you find your rhythm, you just might open a new dimension to happy hour. And the sidebar reads, deliciously buzzed, a few of our favorite THC drinks. Nowadays, still don't want to give up the taste of a proper cocktail? This fruity, but in a good way, no alcohol cannabis spirit works well by itself over rocks or, even better, in an espresso martini or a spicy margarita. CQ. CQ has a line of cannabis seltzers, including a cola sweetened with cane sugar. But we also like its old-fashioned lemonade, infused with sativa for a more uplifting high. You can drink it on its own or mixed into a cocktail. High Five. High Five's peach mango variety is zero sugar and gluten-free, yet somehow very enjoyable. Each can of seltzer, weighing in at 12 ounces, is intended to take effect in 5 minutes. Rickett Brewing Jolie Fleur Blanc. For those times when you want a more celebratory high, this sparkling non-alcoholic wine has just the right amount of effervescence and notes of pear and melon to make you think you're drinking the real thing. Brilixi. These hydration powders are ideal for travel. The yuzu and turmeric lemonade flavor tastes downright healthy, and the nootropics and adaptogens give you a brainy euphoric buzz. Artet. Artet makes sparkling THC beverages like the chamomile lemon spritz, but we prefer the aperitif, which drinks like an Amaro. It contains 2.5 milligrams of THC per 50 milliliters. That's a 1.7 ounce pour. The perfect amount to get your appetite going. Next up, Shine On. Can you pull off pearls? Yes, you can and should, by Jonathan Evans. There will come a time when you want to push it. Take your look from easy and everyday to stylishly subversive. Transform a combo as simple as a tank top and jeans into a double-take-worthy outfit. And you can do that with a strand of pearls. You mean like Grandma wore? Well, yeah. If you've been keeping an eye on the cool kids and the achingly hip downtown types, the off-kilter artsy guys, the capital F fashion fans, you know pearl jewelry has picked up steam. But it's no longer just the avant-garde going for it. Normal guys with a penchant for interesting style are embracing pearls too. Why? Because they can inject some rebellious energy and add that essential finishing touch, all without being too loud about it. Pulling off doesn't require a delicate Jackie O approved necklace, though it could if you're so inclined. You can rough things up by pairing pearls with heavy metal, as in the Tiffany & Company look you see here, as well as some denim or leather. You can also try them with your swankiest formal wear, or throw them on with a tee and a cardigan for your Sunday morning coffee run. Options abound, so dive in. Once you do, the world's your oyster. And there's the photo of a model standing with their back turned to the camera, and you can see a very close up of their neck, and they're wearing a Tiffany Hardware pearl lock necklace, $3,900 by Tiffany & Company. As well as a shirt by Ludovic de Saint-Cernin for $558. Next up, style. A leg up. Dunhill's excellent chinos are the upgrade your spring wardrobe needs, by Jonathan Evans. Chinos exist largely outside of the trend cycle. That means they're reliable and timeless, but it can be tough to determine when they're having a moment. Well, here's a tip. When you see a pair like this, equally easy and chic, from creative director Simon Holloway's newly reinvigorated Dunhill, you can rest assured that chinos are, in fact, having a moment. Despite elevated details like side tabs, a coin pocket, and a couple of generous pleats, you shouldn't think of them as something precious or confine yourself to a certain kind of vibe. Instead, wear them with everything from a sport coat and polished Oxfords to chunky loafers and a vintage white tee. Just like your favorite jeans, which, as it happens, might be spending a little extra time at the back of the closet this spring. There's a photograph of a model wearing a pair of these chinos. They are tan, and indeed, they do have a coin pocket, a buttoned coin pocket, and two generous pleats. They are $675 by Dunhill. The model's wearing a white t-shirt, $68 by Velveteen, and a pair of relatively chunky but svelte-looking loafers, black loafers, for $895 by Gianvito Rossi, and a pair of white socks. White with black socks, very interesting. White socks with black shoes. $31 by Falk. Next up, style. In the bag. Louis Vuitton's updated Speedy Carryall isn't just a revelation, it's a revolution, by Jonathan Evans. Apologies to the purists, but sometimes the remix is better. That's how I felt when I saw Pharrell Williams' rework of the iconic Louis Vuitton Speedy bag. If you're not familiar with Pharrell, I applaud your ability to live this long under a rock, but here's the short version. He's an inimitable music producer and performer, a wildly influential fashion trailblazer, and the person currently charged with leading the men's design efforts of one of the most successful fashion houses in the world, Louis Vuitton. If you're not familiar with the Speedy, I'll cut you some slack, but just a little. The Speedy is arguably the most important handbag of the past century. It was introduced to the market not as the Speedy, but as the Express in 1930. Designed to hold your everyday essentials while remaining manageable and maneuverable, the Speedy quickly became a classic, with fans like Audrey Hepburn helping cement it in the firmament of 20th century fashion. Nowadays, it's the bag that pretty much everyone who cares about fashion history, regardless of gender, would like to have in their collection. But here's the thing. For most of its tenure, the Speedy has been crafted in Vuitton's signature coated canvas. It's tough, tactile. It looks like high-end leather from afar and only reveals itself as something different upon closer inspection. It doesn't show wear. It will stand up admirably to any abuse you throw at it and still appear impeccable. That's exactly why coated canvas is so beloved, in fact. It's stout and sturdy and practically ageless. If you want something to look perfect for a very long time, it's hard to beat. But then there are the folks who embrace imperfection. The guys who want something to slump and slouch and look, at the end of the day, less like the manicured photos that people post to Instagram and more like an item that is entirely their own. And that's where Pharrell's Speedy comes in. Crafted from supple, spongy leather, the newest take on the bag that defined an era feels more approachable. It's not for ladies who lunch. Instead, it's the bag you shove under your arm when you're running late to work or rushing to the airport. It's the one that you reach for time and again because it's pliable and inviting, and it'll hold everything from your laptop to a weekend's worth of clothes. And let's be real, it's the one you'll grab when you want to feel just a little cooler. Ultimately, it's the one that reminds you why we're willing to spend the time and effort and money for luxury in the first place, because it makes our lives that much easier and that much more enjoyable. There's a photo of a model with a couple of these new Speedy bags slung over their shoulders, one red and one kind of a light orange. And the caption reads, Speedy P9 Bandolier 40 bags. They are $11,100 each. The model is also wearing a jacket and a pair of jeans by Louis Vuitton Men's. The jacket is $3,150 and the jeans are $1,890. And then there's a smaller photograph of some of the more iconic bags from the past of Louis Vuitton. It says at left, iconic Louis Vuitton bags through the years, including the Keep All in 1933-34, which is just kind of a plain, roundish, relatively small leather bag with two handles. And the Speedy in 1968. Not too much different bag. Slightly different, slightly smaller, slightly longer. Next up, Dialed In. Thin is in. At just 6.9 millimeters thick, Bulgari's new Octo Finissimo watch blends Swiss precision and thoroughly Italian aesthetics by Nick Sullivan. In high watchmaking, pivoting to an entirely new approach is essentially unheard of. But at Bulgari, the venerable Roman luxury brand that's been around for nearly a century and a half, a recent embrace of ultramodernism has proved powerful. Bulgari is not linked with a specific world like racing or sailing, explains Fabrizio Bonamassa Stigliani, who has led the house's watchmaking operations since 2007. So at a certain moment, I said, guys, we have to find our path. Bulgari's secret weapon is its manufacturer, capable of making the loftiest technical movements, like the ones inside watches so slim they could earn the title of the world's thinnest. Enter the Octo Finissimo, which did just that in 2022. In fact, the collection of angular watches has claimed multiple records for the world's thinnest tourbillon and minute repeater and perpetual calendar since its inception in 2014. The aim always is to push things forward. And the latest iteration does that not with internal complications, but with the materials used to create the Roman-inspired architecture, all circles and squares and octagons, of its distinctive case. The Octo Finissimo Carbon Gold Automatic blends space-age stuff like carbon fiber with age-old craftsmanship to produce a timepiece that weighs just 63 grams, is a meager 6.9 millimeters thick, the movement is only 2.23 millimeters, and looks like something Darth Vader would wear for a big night out. It's a striking testament to Bulgari's in-house expertise. Bold and unmissable, yet simultaneously able to disappear beneath a shirt cuff. That's exactly the sort of balance, or is it tension, Buonamassa Stigliani has in mind. It's the Italian way to wear a watch, he says. Very discreet, understated, with an amazing know-how that nobody else cares about today. So maybe we have the chance to say something different. And there is a photograph of one of these watches, the Octo Finissimo Carbon Gold Automatic Watch, which is $26,800 by Bulgari. And the watch in question here has an almost marbleized, black but marbleized looking band and housing. And the face appears to be kind of a navy blue with gold slash brass markings for the numbers. And it's very simple, just hash marks, a 12 and a 6. Minute hand, second hand, and then a smaller hand within the hand. Next up, grooming. How to get into cologne. Scent invites a specific obsession. Gen Z knows it, and sales are booming. If you're new to the fragrance world, this guide has all the info you need to start geeking out. By Garrett Muntz. 1. The layers of fragrance. All fragrances are created with three layers, which are visually represented by a pyramid. It's a handy tool for understanding not only the notes, but how the scent is going to wear and evolve throughout the day. Top. What you smell as soon as you spray. These are typically lighter notes, like citrus and florals, and tend to quickly disappear, sometimes in a matter of minutes. Middle. Also known as the heart of the fragrance. These notes, frequently floral, fruity, or spicy, act as a bridge between the top and base. They usually remain on the skin for a few hours. Base. Think of these as the foundation. They are often deep and rich, like woods, musks, and vanillas, and give the scent its longevity. 2. Concentration scale. We're used to calling any fragrance for men a cologne, but that's not technically correct. In fact, it depends on the concentration of the scent, which is also an indication of how long it will last on your skin. Eau de cologne. With concentrations of around 2 to 4%, these light fragrances generally last only a few hours and tend to be fresher and citrus heavy. Eau de toilette. These common fragrances feature concentrations of anywhere from 5 to 15% and last about 3 to 4 hours, making them ideal for daytime wear. Eau de parfum. These bold scents are potent, with concentrations between 15 and 20%, and a staying power of up to 5 or 6 hours. They're becoming increasingly popular, thanks to their endurance. Parfum. The strongest of the bunch, these ultra-potent scents have concentrations of 20 to 40%. Most will be between 20 and 30%. Because of the amount of fragrance, they're generally the most expensive. 3. The four main types. There are many different categories of fragrance, but these are the real heavy hitters. Whatever you're buying, it'll probably fall into one of the following four families. Floral. One of the broadest families. Floral fragrances rely on, you guessed it, floral notes. They can range from light and airy to deep and complex. Woody. Characterized by the use of wood notes, these scents are often warm, deep, and what we typically think of as masculine, quote-unquote. Amber, previously referred to as oriental, quote-unquote, these scents have rich, complex notes of vanillas, spices, and resins that give them a luxurious quality. Fresh, the name says it all. These scents use notes of citrus and herbs to create a crisp, zingy, energizing, and sometimes aquatic vibe. 4. A fragrance lexicon. It's not a comprehensive list, but this 101 level vocabulary will still take you a long way. Projection. The distance from which someone can smell the fragrance you're wearing, frequently measured in inches. Sillage. How long a fragrance lingers in the air after you've left the vicinity. Think of it as a scent trail. Dry down. The last stage of a fragrance's evolution on your skin, when the top and middle notes have disappeared and all that's left are the base notes. Accord. Unlike single ingredient notes like sandalwood or bergamot, accords are blends of different notes developed to evoke scents that can't actually be distilled, such as leather or ozone. Flanker. A flanker is like a remix, a version of an existing fragrance that's similar to the original, but with a few slight changes to give it a different feel. Gourmand. These types of fragrances are usually sweet and are designed specifically to evoke food, often dessert. One more thing. The most iconic men's fragrances. Here's a short list. Old Spice. Introduced in 1938 in an aftershave, it's the scent that started it all for American men. Aramis. One of the first perfumes marketed to men when it debuted in 1963, this combination of floral notes with woods and leather helped define what we consider a men's fragrance. Drakkar Noir. An 80s icon. It's basically a Gordon Gekko power suit in olfactory form. Acqua di Gio. The aquatic scent to end all aquatic scents. Since its arrival in 1996, it's become one of the best-selling men's fragrances of all time. CK1. Credited as the first unisex fragrance, this light, fresh scent changed the game by inviting everyone to wear it. Abercrombie Fierce. The official fragrance of early aughts mall rats, this fresh, woody scent still has a chokehold on the millennial consciousness. Tom Ford Oud Wood. This elegant, spicy, woody blend so effectively captures a feeling of luxury that it's still a top seller even more than a decade after its launch. And they have a photograph of some other interesting men's colognes here. A few suggestions clockwise from top. At the top, Diptyque's Tom Dow for $180. Next, Dior Homme for $120. Le Lion de Chanel, $300. And Perfume Head Xanaboud for $750. Next up, the Authentics. A colossal jacket. For years, I admired an elusive graffiti writer. Now I have his work on my shot perfecto. And there's a photograph of a customized perfecto jacket. It's a leather jacket. It looks like a leather motorcycle jacket, basically, which costs $940 bought new. And this one's by Shot. When I was young, I spent a lot of time in train yards. I was really into graffiti. Oh, this is by Derek Guy. Sorry. When I was young, I spent a lot of time in train yards. I was really into graffiti, and freight trains were like rolling art galleries on metal, where you could see work by people from across the country. One of the most prolific writers was Colossus of Rhodes, spelled R-O-A-D-S, who scribbled the profile of a cowboy's face on what seemed like every boxcar in America. Under each profile was a cryptic message. Big mistake. Audience expands. Never came back. It was rumored the Colossus was a railway worker who had been at it since the 1970s. He drew his moniker in the folkloric style of hobo art. In the 1930s, during the depths of the Great Depression, a large number of Americans illegally hopped freight trains in search of work. Legend has it that they communicated with one another through pictograms. Each symbol carried a meaning. This town has work. Doctor here won't charge. Religious talk gets free meal. These symbols were a way to make a dangerous journey safer for fellow itinerants. In 2015, I found someone talking about Colossus of Rhodes on a menswear message board. It was his nephew. I couldn't believe it. The poster agreed to put me in touch with his uncle, Russell Butler, who turned out to be a former brakeman on the Missouri Pacific Railroad. I told Butler how much his work had inspired me, and he agreed to sign the back of my shot perfecto. He tagged it with the same graphic I had seen so many times in the dead of night, then wrote, "Fragments of Contumacy," underneath it. I later had the jacket relined in antique Japanese boro. Now it's a connection to a special time in my life that feels increasingly distant, much like the view of the station from a boxcar after the train departs. And the jacket is pretty cool looking, definitely well worn. And the tag on the back, the drawing by Colossus of Rhodes, looks very interesting. It's just in white, almost like chalk, but it obviously must have been made with something other than chalk. Next up, dispatches from the new Middle Age. The drugs work if you can find them. I am a 43-year-old man with ADHD. My life is a scattered mess, but Adderall helps. Then the pharmacies ran out of it, and my life became a search for pills, by Jason Diamond. Here's how my day begins. I wake up at 6 a.m. with a list of tasks I've written down and reminders I've emailed myself. I sit down to work, knowing my entire day is planned. Nothing is going to stop me today. Oh, look! A hawk outside my window has seen a rat scurrying on the ground. My wife just woke up. I need to tell her a joke. Instagram! I should check Instagram. What's up with the way my books are stacked? You know what? I should go for a walk and get a breakfast burrito. Yes, that sounds good. Also, orange juice and a coffee. Actually, the diner is open. Should I get pancakes? No, wait. I have a schedule. It's written down. I'm supposed to be writing this thing for Esquire. Welcome to year 43 of ADHD. I'm a middle-aged man with a neurodevelopmental disorder for which I take medication to get through the day. I'm embarrassed to admit this, even though some people show off their ADHD like a guy making sure you notice the Cartier tank on his wrist. Look at Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube, and you'll find glib confessionals about life with ADHD, testimonials on how to be productive, and claims of cures, quote-unquote, through diet and exercise. All of these attract hundreds, if not thousands, of likes. Call it the memification of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. I was diagnosed with ADD in 1985 at the age of 5. Doctors swore I'd grow out of it. School administrators suggested to my parents that having ADD, a diagnosis later upgraded with the addition of hyperactivity. In the late 80s, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders finally added the H. It was like wearing a scarlet letter. One authority figure said I was bound for prison because I couldn't sit still and pay attention. Going to college or learning a trade was out of the question. My divorced parents fought over how to treat my ADHD. One was pro-medication. The other thought pills would turn me into a zombie and tried to enroll me in military school. When I was 8, the parent who wanted me on meds won and I started taking Ritalin. It was the first of many medications. In retrospect, the pills seemed less about helping me and more about shutting me up. By 18, with the decision left up to me, I'd stopped taking medicine altogether. I did not go to prison, nor did I grow out of ADHD. In fact, I also have an anxiety and obsessive-compulsive personality disorder to top it off. This has led to more than a few Tony Soprano panic attacks. My brain moves fast, and I'm unable to process thoughts or emotions. Then things get backed up. Sooner or later, my heart is pounding. I'm sweating, and I feel like death. That's not a great way to live. And so, in 2018, after 2 decades of living without it, and with a host of mixed feelings after an overprescribed childhood, I went back on medication for my ADHD. And we're going to have to stop it there for this week, but we'll pick up right where we left off for next week. Until then, this is Jay Stowe. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's installment of Esquire's March 2024 issue. See you next time. Bye.